the entire family through these life changes. No doubt, the death of a loved one is devastating, and the grieving process varies from person to person. All death-related business matters are handled personally by a member of the Martin family, either Ross or his son Tom Martin. For personal preference at a funeral home, let the Martin Funeral Home handle everything. The Martin Funeral Home, located on Center Avenue in Butler.
A chance of showers today. A 50-50 shot. Some wet weather could come by. Cloudy with a high near 40 degrees. A low tonight down to about 28 degrees. And then some sunshine on Tuesday. A high for the rest of the week really in the 30s, mid-30s. So partly sunny on Tuesday with a high of 33. A low down to 25 on Tuesday night. On Wednesday, a 40% chance of a snow shower, mostly cloudy on Wednesday with a high of 31 and a low down to 24. And then back to a small chance of a snow shower, maybe just a flurry on Thursday, mostly cloudy and a high of 34. We're at 34. Let's bump it up to 42 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. News time, 12:31. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's Your Turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. It's December. December 3rd, open talk to begin the program today. Phone number is 283-2525. Guests joining us later, we'll talk with Sarah Jansen. She is the senior editor at the World Almanac and Book of Facts. And we've talked with Sarah for a number of years. The new edition of the World Almanac comes out this week. And you might be interested. We'll find out what's new and what are some of the old faithful items and features that are in the World Almanac and Book of Facts. It's a huge reference volume published each year. This will be the 2019 edition, of course. Also, we're going to be talking about Napoleon today for you history buffs. And we'll be chatting about the Pittsburgh Philharmonic concert coming up later this week at Suckup Theater, their Holiday Pops concert. So we'll have some guests to talk about that later on the program as well. But it's open talk to begin with. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. A lot of bleary-eyed people, I suppose. Football fans here this morning as the Pittsburgh Steelers played a night game last night and lost another crushing defeat. And I'll tell you, a couple of weeks back, it looked like the Steelers were a lock to make the playoffs. Even a lot of folks thought the Super Bowl. No, I don't know whether they're going to make the postseason. I mean, they're falling fast. They've lost two in a row. They blew leads both times. And 3 weeks ago when they won, it was a fluke when they won against Jacksonville and played very poorly in that game, too. So, well, I don't know. Maybe they can turn it around. Somebody better light a fire under them pretty quickly. We've got four games left, and two of them are going to be tough. New England Patriots and at the New Orleans Saints down in the Superdome. So what do you think? Are the Steelers done? Maybe not yet, but they'd better turn it on pretty quickly. Only half a game ahead of Baltimore now. Baltimore Ravens, who are written off for dead just a couple of weeks back. They're coming on strong. you stay up to watch the Steeler games, the night games? I can't stand them. I really can't. They take so long. They run so late. When you get up, when I do, and when a lot of other people get up too, you just can't stay up that late to watch a football game. And for fans who stayed up last night, it was the last play of the game. San Diego won it as time expired with a field goal. It was almost an unbelievable series of events. As the Steelers had penalties, two, three times in a row? Once the guy missed the field goal, but the Steelers had a penalty, so they tried it again. 5 yards closer, and this one was blocked, but again the Steelers had a penalty. And finally they made it as time expired. Just a crushing defeat. I wonder whether they can come back from that. I don't know. But if you spent the better part of 3.5, 4 hours watching or listening to that game, it was disappointing right at the end, that's for sure. Open talk at 283-2525, 283-2525. This is the first full day of Hanukkah. Menorahs were lit around the world starting at sundown last evening. The beginning of the first day of Hanukkah, the 8-day Festival of Lights. It's actually, from what I read, really kind of a minor holy day on the Jewish calendar. But it's a festive one, a very festive one. And, of course, the Jewish calendar operates on a 13-month year. So sometimes Hanukkah is a little bit later in the year. Sometimes it's early. This year, it's pretty early. Yeah. So, happy Hanukkah to all of our friends of the Jewish faith celebrating the first day of Hanukkah today. We had some nice feedback from Friday's program on model trains. Jack Bennett and Pat Gallagher were here in the studio. And with us talking about model trains, this is the time of the year when a lot of folks set up their train layouts, even if it's just a simple, track layout around the Christmas tree, or maybe you've got a big one. Maybe you've got a big fancy layout with a lot of trains. Yeah. It's that time of the year, huh? Yeah. Did you have a train when you were a kid? I did. My brother and I had a Lionel that we would set up every year. It was really part of the fun. When, got to be around the 1st of December, you could start getting the train equipment out. We had a pretty good set. Took a couple of days to get it all set up and ready to go, and then you could have some fun with the model trains. I'd like to see them come back. I don't think they're quite as popular as they once were. Of course, we don't have any railroads these days here in the United States anymore. Right? Very, very limited passenger service. Have some freight lines, but passenger service, not so much anymore. Maybe that's one of the reasons why the popularity of model railroading has waned a bit. But we had a lot of nice feedback from our program, and we were certainly talking with a couple of guys who are very knowledgeable on model trains. Jack Bennett from Jack's Tracks Train Shop over in Katanning, and Pat Gallagher, who's been a collector of model trains for many, 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 many years. It was good fun talking with them on Friday. Hope you enjoyed. As I was checking around the TV screen last night, just popping around here and there, I came upon the tail end of a PBS special on Channel 13 on Peter, Paul, and Mary. Performances from the Newport Folk Festival back in the early and mid-1960s. And gosh, I wish I'd have been able to see the whole thing. I saw about the last 20 minutes, I guess. It was one of their pledge break things, so they're raising money for public broadcasting. But just a fabulous, fabulous show from what I saw. Some Peter, Paul, and Mary tunes that I'd never seen before. Of course, this was the early days of their career, as the folk boom was just taking off in the early 60s. Newport Folk Festival, a staple for many years, Newport, Rhode Island, on the coast, on the Atlantic coast, very picturesque town. And then it went out of business for a few years and then came back again. It was so amazing to see a very, very young Peter, Paul, and Mary performing together. It was fun. Yeah, it was fun. I guess they have a CD that's available of that. At least they were offering it as an incentive to contribute to public broadcasting last night. I had not seen it before, so I'll have to look into it. Newport, 1963 to 65, Peter, Paul, and Mary. And some great pictures there. They had them singing with the Pete Seeger. They had pictures of them with the Beatles. One fabulous segment had Peter Yarrow doing a duet with a very, very young Joan Baez. And one evening at the Newport Folk Festival in 1963. It was great fun. Did you see it? Yeah, great fun. Also, one of my favorite movies was on last evening on Turner Classic Movies, The Shop Around the Corner, a Jimmy Stewart film from 1940. Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan. Have you ever seen this film? It's black and white, you know, it's 1940. But if you saw the Meg Ryan, Tom Hanks film, You've Got Mail, 15 or 20 years ago, pretty good movie. I haven't watched that in a while. Pretty good. But the plot line for You've Got Mail came from this film, The Shop Around the Corner in 1940 with Jimmy Stewart. Now, if you've seen You've Got Mail, you know that Tom Hanks had a big fancy bookstore. And around the corner was Meg Ryan's little independent bookstore. And they were communicating with each other via email without knowing who the other person was. And it was the same thing, not internet, of course, back in 1940, but letters between Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan. And it's a wonderful, warm movie, a nice Christmas time movie, nice holiday fare, and I'm sure that's why Turner Classic Movies programmed it last night. I've seen it several times before, but it was nice to see a few minutes of it again last night before it was time for me to turn out the lamp and hit the sack. Open talk here this afternoon at 283-2525. Nice to have you with us on It's Your Turn here on WISR. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after these words.
If you're curious, the news informs you, but it also piques your curiosity. Enter The Context, a free weekday morning newsletter from PA Post. PA Post is the statewide nonprofit and nonpartisan news organization reporting on public policy issues in the state. The Context ties together compelling stories from across Pennsylvania with insight and perspective and points your curiosity in a meaningful direction. Start your subscription today at papost.org.
Hey, finished your homework yet?
Almost. What's on your laptop?
Oh, it's a site to help me talk with you about alcohol.
Is this going to take all night?
No. In fact, it says take it one subject at a time.
Why now?
Well, you're at the age where you need to know the facts about alcohol.
But I'm only 8.
It says that 1 in 3 kids have already tried alcohol by your age.
Really?
Talk with your kids about alcohol. Learn more at knowwhennohow.org. A message from the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board.
Welcome back. It's Open Talk at 283-2525. Today would have been the birthday of the late Andy Williams, who died 6 years ago. He'd been ill for a couple of years. Andy Williams. Remember Andy Williams? His signature tune was Moon River, which probably 500 people have recorded down through the years, but he really had the definitive version of it. And he had a very popular musical variety TV show, too, as many people did back in the heyday of that format, back in the 60s and 70s especially. You know, Perry Como, I guess, was one of the first. Glenn Campbell, Sonny and Cher, Dean Martin, Andy Williams, Jackie Gleason, they all had these musical variety shows. Many of them pretty much the same format. One surprising one that did not work was Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra had one of those shows, too. I never saw it. I've read about it. It was back in the 50s, and for some reason, it just didn't go. It only lasted 1 year, I think. Sinatra would sometimes appear as a guest on some of the other shows, but one of his own just didn't happen. But Andy Williams, very warm personality, and he always had a wonderful Christmas show. He'd bring his whole family. He had a bunch of kids. Bring his whole family together, and then his brothers, you know. Probably, as I remember, at least as a kid, the Andy Williams and the Perry Como Christmas specials were probably the best. Yeah. Very nice. Well, we have them at least, you know, on CD or on your computer or your device. You can listen to these guys if you still like to hear them. And I do at Christmas time. Well, nothing like the mellow voice of Perry Como or Andy Williams. I guess I would lean toward Perry Como if I had to make a pick. But Andy Williams was pretty good, too, at Christmas time. And I don't know whether any of those specials are replayed on TV these days. I know there are at least a couple of channels that replay old shows. But I don't watch those very much, so I'm not sure. And, of course, there could be copyright issues as well, or issues with the estates of both of those guys. But fond memories of Christmas specials with Perry Como and Andy Williams. Como, even after his regular show, his regular weekly show ended, and I don't know when that was, but he would have a Christmas special every year, long after his regular run ended. Open Talk at 283-2525 is the number here today. 283-2525 on this Monday, December 3rd. Tear another page off the calendar over the weekend. Strange way the calendar fell this year because, you know, Thanksgiving came and went and we still had over a week left in November. But now we've moved into December. This past weekend, and now you can really start feeling the holiday spirit, huh? Yeah, I think so, too. Well, we're going to check in with our first guest here momentarily, and that is Sarah Jansen, who joins us. She is the senior editor of the World Almanac and Book of Facts. So give us a moment here, and we'll hook up by telephone, of course. Sarah's not with us, but we'll be chatting with her about the new edition, the 2019 edition of the World Almanac. It's coming up next here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back.
I'm Dr. Corey Pasek, an orthopedic surgeon specializing in hand and upper extremity surgery at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. The Butler area has always played a significant role in my life, dating back to my days as a player on the Knock Knights football team. Now, as Knox team physician, I get to do what I love while giving back to the community that has raised me. That's a true win-win. To learn more about the Tri-Rivers team, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
The World Almanac for 2019 is out, and we're going to be talking here on the next segment of It's Your Turn on WISR with the senior editor of the World Almanac. That's Sarah Jansen. Sarah, Dave Malarkey here. We've been hooking up to talk about the World Almanac for several years. Good to talk to you again.
You too. It's always a lot of fun to be here.
So the World Almanac always sits on my desk. I refer to it a lot. It is, in fact, the best-selling reference book of all time, isn't it? I believe so.
That is true. We've been around for 151 years, and we're still selling new copies every year. This year's 2019 edition, we're hoping we'll do the same.
So, what's new? I understand you have election results in here already from 2018. Gosh, the election wasn't all that long ago.
It was not, and it was quite a scramble to get those election results in there. But I think it's something that people would expect to find in a book about 2018. You know, the election Midterm elections aren't usually as big of a story as presidential, but it was definitely one of the main focal points of 2018. So we have those election results in there. Of course, because we had to get the booked production so quickly after the election, you'll see that there are still a couple of races still outstanding because of recounts and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But we're careful to document, you know, at what point we did call those races, or if they weren't called, why.
Yeah, I think the Florida U.S. Senate race wasn't called until just a week or so ago. So, yeah.
Exactly. And some other races in Arizona and California and Georgia. So definitely something that we were documenting in a lot of different ways.
There's always a recap of the outgoing year in the World Almanac. So you took a look back at 2018. Let me guess what some of the big stories would be. Well, certainly the Me Too movement, I would think, right?
Oh, certainly one of our top 10 news stories this year. You know, not just some of the allegations, but also starting to see some legal action in response to some of these accusations. And as we're following up on this, you know, we're over a year into, you know, the real main story at this point. It's been interesting to see the different responses that systems are to the allegation and develop their processes going forward to keep on top of these things.
Also, the U.S. Supreme Court nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, that was a big story. I'm sure you recap that, do you not?
Oh, of course, yes. A new Supreme Court justice is always a big news story, and the confirmation process, at least in recent years, has generally been fairly contentious. So we documented that, and then, of course, the allegations against Kavanaugh just made that story even more explosive, even more headline-dominating, at least for those several weeks in September. So paying attention to all of those things was a big part of our late summer in 2018.
How do you determine the top 10 news stories? Do you the editors sit around a table and kind of brainstorm this thing?
Yeah, it's a lot because we spend so much of the year paying attention to what's going on in the news. You sort of have a sense, you know, going in what the big news stories of the year are going to be. You know that the election is always going to be somewhere in that top 10 list, for example. But toward the end of the year when we're making our selections, it is a process of looking at the stories that have dominated the headlines and where we think they rank as far as not just how they dominated 2018, but how we think these stories will have an impact on events going forward. So including things like U.S. immigration policies, including things like the Mueller investigation and developments there, the Korean nuclear negotiations, you know, these are all stories that will certainly have an impact going forward as well as in the past year.
You've had, in years gone by, a section called Time Capsule. Is that included in the 2019 World Almanac as well?
It is indeed. And the Time Capsule is a lot of fun for the World Almanac editors to put together because we get to include some stories that are maybe a little less serious than some of the other ones that we cover. So we do have some serious news items in there as well. But we like to include things from pop culture. We have you know, the new Philadelphia Flyers mascot, Gritty, who's been kind of shaking things up on social media. We've got those calendar pages from Brett Kavanaugh that were submitted to the Judiciary Committee from his high school days. So we sort of run the gamut of the silly to the serious in that Time Capsule.
It's always interesting to look back at the year because, you know, you get busy with the holidays and so on, and you kind of forget some of the things that happened in 2018, whether it's a major news story or something offbeat like the new Philadelphia Flyer mascot, goofy-looking thing, by the way.
Indeed. Yeah, you know, it is always it's always sort of hard to collect the whole year in one place, but I think particularly in this past couple of years, the pace of the news stories has been accelerating so much that by the end of the week, sometimes you have trouble remembering everything that happened, let alone the whole year. I mean, it was just in this past January that you had in Hawaii that false ballistic missile alert that was a pretty big story, but it's hard to even think, looking back, it seems like, you know, 1,000 years ago at this point, because so much else has happened since then.
That's true. In fact, until I was glancing through the World Almanac for 2019, I'd forgotten that we had Winter Olympics. They were in Korea. And that kind of, in a way, led to the talks with the U.S. and the softening of relations between North and South Korea, didn't it?
It sure did. And you had the unified Korean flag that the two countries marched under in the opening ceremonies, which was obviously an unprecedented development. And one of those things that you sort of see, you know, international relations meet sports in a way that, you know, you don't often get to see those things collaborating and making a difference in that way. But it was definitely a big, big story in 2018. But like you said, it's almost hard to remember that the world, that the Olympic Games took place in 2018.
Mm-hmm. The World Almanac covers the entire year in sports of 2018. And this includes things like the World Series and the Super Bowl and, lest we forget, worldwide, the biggest worldwide sporting event of all time. It's even bigger than the Olympics in terms of interest, and that's World Cup Soccer. And we had World Cup Soccer
last year. Huge story this summer. Yeah. Maybe a little bit less of a headline dominator here in the U.S., but definitely for soccer fans, it's always fun to see the World Cup Soccer tournament take place. And it was won by France, so the big story there was that they had such a young team and a team dominated a lot by immigrants. So it was definitely an overlapping sort of Venn diagram of 2018 news story.
The reason it wasn't such a big story in the U.S. is because, shockingly, the U.S. team didn't even make it into the World Cup. So
it was a real heartbreaker, for the U.S. soccer. Hopefully we'll be able to get back in there in 2022.
You still have all the marvelous statistics. Sometimes if I've got a couple of minutes, I'll just pick up my copy of the World Almanac and browse through, you know, population statistics for countries around the world. You still got all that stuff in there, Sarah?
Oh, of course. We're always going to have tons of population statistics, an article about every country in the world, an article about every state in the union. The great thing about the World Almanac is that you'll still find all of those features that you've come to rely on us for. But like you said, you can just pick up the book and flip to a random page and probably find something that you didn't even think to look up that you find yourself being curious about and reading more about. So hopefully you can still use the World Almanac in both of those different ways.
What about color pictures of the flags of all the countries in the world? I can remember looking at those as a kid. Do you still have those in there?
Oh, of course. And actually, there were a couple of flag changes this year. You might have a hard time picking them out because, you know, you don't necessarily do a one-to-one comparison. But there were a couple of changes this year, including that Swaziland, a country in Africa, has actually changed its name. It's now known as Eswatini. So you'll see that order having shifted, and you'll see the new flag changes in there as well.
Talking to Sarah Jensen, she's the senior editor of the World Almanac. Any new features this year that we can look forward to, Sarah?
We have a really great sports feature this year that was a lot of fun to put together. We're looking at some of the sports achievements of some of the older athletes in 2018, things like Tiger Woods winning a tournament for the first time in 5 years, Serena Williams, obviously, coming back from a very difficult pregnancy, it sounds like, and getting to the finals of two Grand Slam tournaments. We wanted to see if this was unprecedented or just something that we're noticing in particular in 2018. And we took a look back into sports history for some other accomplishments by athletes on the older side, the later side of their careers. And it was a lot of fun to put together.
Do you have a section on the royal wedding? We had another royal wedding in Britain this year.
Absolutely. One of the more fun news stories, I think, for people to pay attention to. Not necessarily going to, you know, change the world, but certainly fun to pay attention to and to imagine being a part of, and obviously something that was watched either on television or online by billions of people.
Our time begins to run short. Did I hear you correctly, Sarah, when you said that the World Almanac dates back more than 150 years?
The World Almanac has been published since 1868, so yes, we are in our 151st year and hopefully going strong in years ahead.
What color is it this year? People are looking for it on their newsstand or their bookstore.
Sure, yeah. We change the cover every year so that it's easy to pick out the new one on the shelves. This year's cover is blue with bright yellow 2019 on the front cover. So hopefully you won't be able to miss the World Almanac when you see it in bookstores.
Mm-hmm. And the full title when you're looking at the front cover is The World Almanac and Book of Facts. And it is loaded with facts, that's for sure. Hey, Sarah, nice to talk with you again. Sarah Jansen is senior editor of The World Almanac. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today.
Oh, it's always such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All righty. So long now.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Nice to talk with Sarah again. We've chatted with her for several years now. And whenever the new edition of the Almanac comes out, The World Almanac and Book of Facts, great reference work to put on your desk or your bookshelf. And it's out this week, the 2019 edition. Well, there's more to come on the Monday It's Your Turn program. Coming up, what do you know about Napoleon? Well, if you'd have asked me last week, I would have said Napoleon Bonaparte, Waterloo, and that's about it. I did not know that Napoleon had a campaign in the Middle East. Egypt and what was then known as Palestine. Did you know that? I didn't either. Well, we'll talk about it. We'll find out about it coming up in just a moment with our next guest. He is Jean-Paul Lewis, and he's written about Napoleon's campaign in Egypt way back when. So stick around. That's coming up here on the It's Your Turn program right after this break.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
You and your family are invited to attend the Thompson Miller 18th Annual Remembrances, Tinsels, and Tears Candlelight Memorial Service on Tuesday, December 4th at 7 o'clock in the evening at the Mount Chestnut Presbyterian Church, 727 West Old Route 422 in nearby Mount Chestnut. Holiday time can be difficult, especially after experiencing the recent death of someone you love. We want to support you as you remember the life of your loved one during this holiday season. The Acts Choir will be joining us again this year, and there's no charge. Our special remembrance tree in memory of loved ones who have died is on display throughout December at Thompson Miller Funeral Home in downtown Butler. Please join us on Tuesday, December 4th at 7 o'clock in the evening at the Mount Chestnut Presbyterian Church, 727 Old Route 422 in nearby Mount Chestnut. Easily handicap accessible. For information about purchasing a remembrance ornament in memory of your loved one, visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. The name of your loved one will be recognized at the service. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, we have a great novel to talk about, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Jean-Paul Lewis, author of The Tricolor and The Centaur. Jean-Paul, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Dave.
So tell us a little bit about the Tricolor and the Centaur. This is about Napoleon, right?
It's Napoleon when he was 27 years old and when he invaded Egypt and the Holy Land with 35,000 men, women, and even some children who tagged along. And it recounts Bonaparte's invasion and occupation of Egypt and the Holy Land between 1798 and 1801.
Could we classify this accurately as historical fiction?
Yes. But the characters are real, the events are real, so it is a historical novel, but I keep a very, very strict timeline on events, characters, and what the French Army of the Orient went through in a 2-year span in living and dealing with the local population of Egypt and the Holy Land, which at the time was called Palestine, now it's called Israel. And the book opens up with the conquest of Malta, and then in June of 1798, the story will take you into Egypt and the death march to Cairo from Alexandria, and has the Battle of the Pyramids, his annihilation by Admiral Nelson of the French Mediterranean fleet at the Battle of the Nile. So he was initially victorious on land, but now he was marooned. He lost his fleet. So Bonaparte and his troops of 35,000 men soon confront fanatical resistance, insurrection, guerrilla desert warfare, the plague, ancient superstitions, slavery, harems, and the birth of Egyptology. Now, I used a lot of 19th century French military records and journals and letters and so forth, and I try to bring to life these historical actors of this incredible time in history, from rankers to famous generals to a young Bonaparte and the ruthless leaders that resisted him.
I dare say that perhaps the majority of our listeners, obviously everyone has heard the name Napoleon Bonaparte, but I dare say that many of them are not familiar at all with his excursions into the Middle East, into Egypt and Palestine.
That is true, much to my amazement, and quite frankly, what goes around comes around. Voltaire, the famous philosopher during the French Enlightenment period, hit it on the nail when he exclaimed, "History does not repeat itself, but mankind always does." Now, we're in the Middle East right now, and we're facing the same dilemmas, problems, and difficulties as the French did over 200 years ago in the same environment. So, again, we are repeating history, and I'm afraid the results will be just as disastrous in the end, whether it's 2 years or 10 years or 50 years. Once you go into an alien culture and you try and change it, you're going to be met with fanatical resistance. And it's sometimes hard to understand, but other cultures don't like when another culture tries to make an impact on their own culture. So things are repeating itself again.
Was Napoleon in the Middle East this whole time with the troops, or was he...
Most of the time, yes. He was there for about 2 years, and then he abandoned his army to go back to France and eventually became emperor within 3 years, 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the French army was left to their own devices, and they stayed there for about another year. Again, cut off, so they lacked everything, and they were tired and weary. And then the English came and basically made a deal with the French for them to leave, and most of them wanted to leave Egypt and go back home. And that's what happened, and that's why the English occupied Egypt for almost another 150 years.
Mm-hmm. And that led to... future problems. As you said, history doesn't repeat itself, but individuals do because, you know, in later stages, fairly recent actually, if you're talking about the history of the world, we had the British drawing the boundary lines for countries such as Iraq and Iran, and that
and
led to
Syria,
trouble.
And
Syria.
All of Africa. Asia, much less extent there, but definitely the Middle East and Africa. I mean, we just drew lines where we thought, you know, they should be marked by rivers or mountain ranges and so forth. But what happened is that you were interfering with tribal movement that was going on for thousands of years, even before the Europeans came. And this is why you have a lot of arguments among the indigenous people in the area. I mean, Kuwaitis don't like Saudis, Saudis don't like Kuwaitis, Iraqis don't like really anybody, and So it has become a mess. And Napoleon had to fight the Ottoman Empire in order to gain a foothold in Egypt. I mean, he conquered Egypt within 45 minutes. I mean, the Battle of the Pyramid was quick and very deadly for the Mamluks, who were the protectors of Egypt. But he never really pacified the country or the areas that he had conquered. There was just too many factors to take into consideration and too much competition. Plus, the environment was very hostile to the French army. I mean, you can imagine a northern European army where in the day where it's 120 degrees and they're wearing wool. Very, very, so there was much suffering, suicides, and if you would be stranded somewhere or fall behind the major column, you will get your throat cut. And so it was a very, very dangerous environment. We had the same experience here, where we have Iraqis or Afghanis, especially Afghanis right now, who say that they're with us, but then they'll turn around and shoot you right there.
Yeah.
So you couldn't trust anybody back then, and you can't really trust anybody now either, because in the end, we are the foreign invader.
Did Napoleon have any romantic entanglements while he was in Egypt? You know what I'm thinking, of course.
He actually did. He had one. He was married at the time, but he found out that his wife, Josephine, was cheating on him while she was still in France, and that threw him into a fury, because he really did love her very much, and he felt horribly, that he was cuckolded. So he took on a local French, officer's wife, sent the officer on a fool's errand to get rid of him, and then he shacked up with this woman called Pauline Fourez. I think the affair might have lasted 6-9 months, but it was something to keep him busy, and it was his small, it was, in a way, revenge against his wife, who he adored, and cheated on him while he was there roasting in Egypt. She was wining and dining in Paris.
Shades of Mark Antony and the Cleopatra centuries
indeed.
Earlier.
Indeed. So, but yes, so that you can go back 2,000 years. Nothing really has changed.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's well put. I didn't even think about that, but you're right. Same type of, it's
same place,
very close.
Egypt. Yeah. Well, listen, a little bit about your title, John Paul Lewis, the tricolor and the centaur. Tricolor, of course, refers, I'm assuming, to the French flag, red, white, and blue. What's the centaur?
That's correct.
What's the centaur?
The centaur is a Turkish sword made from heavy Damascus steel. They're huge. They're about 4 to 5 feet long. But what's really different between a centaur and, let's say, a European sword is that the half of the blade was curved.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Curved at an angle. So it was ideal to cause as much damage to your opponent as possible. It was heavy, massive, very sharp, curved. So it was especially useful on horseback, and you can really cut off heads and arms and inflict mortal wounds very, very easily. And they were much more effective than European swords, who were rather long but thin. But against a centaur, you are almost helpless, especially against an opponent who knew how to use it. I mean, this is a sort of sword that will cut you in half.
Even looking at a picture of a scimitar, I mean, that looked very gruesome, yeah.
Very, very deadly weapon, and a lot of French officers actually adopted the weapon as time went on. They discarded their European swords, and so to get a hold of of a centaur was a luxury, and they were much coveted because they were so effective.
Our time runs short. This is an interesting novel. If you want to learn a bit more about Napoleon and his campaign in Egypt and Palestine, what's the title again, John Paul Lewis?
The Tricolor and the Centaur. The Tricolor and the Centaur.
John Paul Lewis.
You can go on Amazon and get it, Barnes & Noble, almost any venue you will find it. You can either punch in Google, The Tricolor and the Centaur, or my name, John Paul Sinclair Lewis, and you'll see the book.
Nice to talk with you today.
You can find the book that way.
Sounds like a great read. I'm anxious to pick it up myself, sir. Nice to talk with you.
I would love that very much. I want you to pick it up and read it. It's a page-turner. You will not be bored. I repeat, you will not be bored. There's just too much horror, too much grit in it to be bored, and too many interesting characters. They were all fascinating characters on both sides.
Yeah.
On both sides. And I do deal with both sides. And trying to show the clash of civilizations, the Muslim world versus the Christian world, if you want, with the Jews in the middle.
Yeah, that can be a lesson for us even today. I've got
it. It is. It's still just like Antony and Cleopatra.
That's right.
Nothing really changes much in the Middle East. If you go back 2,000 years, it's pretty much the same. You know, so murdering people like what the Saudis did in Istanbul is quite common among them. Yeah. That's why they're so surprised that everybody's shocked.
Yeah. Hey, John.
That's the way that they've always done business. Mm-hmm.
John Paul Lewis, nice to talk with you today. Thanks for spending some time
with us.
And
thank you. Thank you very much for your time. And sure. Happy holidays, everybody.
And same to you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Sure. So long. Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Great to have you with us, and there's still more to come. You've heard of, I assume, Johns Hopkins, the famous medical research hospital in Maryland, in the Baltimore area, Johns Hopkins. It's named after a guy called Johns Hopkins. And yes, there's an S on the end of his name. It's not John Hopkins, it's Johns Hopkins. If you can stick around for another minute or two, we'll find out more about this man, Johns Hopkins, with our next guest, Antero Pietila. That's coming up on It's Your Turn. And don't forget, we'll also be talking with some folks from the Pittsburgh Philharmonic a little bit later on the program today. And they're going to be in Butler this coming weekend for a holiday pops concert. So more to come on It's Your Turn, the Monday edition here on WISR. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Have you been keeping up with your Armco Credit Union Christmas Club contributions this year? If not, that's okay, because they can help you manage those holiday expenses. Armco Credit Union is offering holiday loans with a low 9.5% fixed APR, which comes with a 12-month term, meaning your holiday expenses will be paid off by next year. Take advantage of this offer now through December 31st. Visit armcocreditunion.com for more info. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium. They now have a new store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? They have a wide variety of pipes, a custom walk-in humidor, an e-cigarette juice bar, and a large selection of tobacco and accessories. Tobacco for Less, for all your smoking and vaping needs, be sure to stop by one of their locations in Butler, Aliquippa, and Sharon.
How much do you know, listeners, about Johns Hopkins? I'm not talking about the hospital, I'm talking about the man. I'm Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're going to be chatting with Antero Pietila, who has written a book called The Ghosts of Johns Hopkins. Nice to meet you, sir. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
My pleasure.
I'm sure that most folks have heard of the hospital, Johns Hopkins. They might not have realized that it was named after an actual person. And probably the confusion comes from the fact that his first name has an S on the end. Would you agree with that, sir?
Yes, sir. In his hometown of Baltimore, people are kind of confused about it. And the reason why his first name is Johns, not John, is that the first name pays tribute to his great-grandmother, whose family name was Johns.
I see. So when people think it's a misprint, that it's supposed to be John Hopkins, no, it's actually Johns. So who was this guy anyway, and how did we end up with a hospital named after him, sir?
He was a man whose own schooling ended at the age of 12. He was a farm boy. His family was involved in tobacco farming. He came to Baltimore at the age of 17 and started a very successful money-making career, and he became one of the wealthiest men in America. And he never married, and at the just before he died, he willed his wealth to create a university, Johns Hopkins University Hospital and Medical School. And it's kind of interesting that when he made that bequest, that was the largest bequest that had been made to American education at that point. And just last week, the former New York mayor, Michael Bloomberg, gave money to Hopkins that was the largest ever that had been given to American education, and that amount was $1.8 billion. So that tells you a little bit about what has happened to philanthropy and the value of the dollar.
Wow. And did you say, sir, that his family was originally from the Deep South, or maybe I heard you incorrectly?
No, his family, they had originally come from Wales in England, and they had they were very well connected. Johns Hopkins was a direct descendant of William the Conqueror, and so his forefathers had received several hundred acres of prime land in southern Maryland, and that's where they cultivated tobacco.
We're chatting, listeners, if you're joining us a few minutes late on It's Your Turn here today, we're chatting with Antero Pietila, author of The Ghosts of Johns Hopkins. Why that title, sir? Why refer to it as The Ghosts? What do you mean by that?
Well, Johns Hopkins is pretty unknown even in his hometown. He was a very modest Quaker, and he destroyed all of his private papers, so there has never been any full-scale biography about the man. And mine has a very strong biographical element in the book. But at the same time, I talk about the controversies that are defining Hopkins today, and those controversies are pretty similar to what you in Pittsburgh are experiencing with the UPMC Mercy discussion.
Mm-hmm. He became one of America's richest men. How so? In the railroad business, or how did he become so wealthy?
He started as a merchant. He started as a dry goods wholesaler, and he was a very pragmatic opportunist. So in the beginning, he realized that while he could sell lots of merchandise to farmers, farmers did not have any ready cash because there was no national currency in the United States in those days. So Johns Hopkins decided to barter, and so he took from the farmers home-distilled liquor and brought it to Baltimore and rebottled it and sold it as Hopkins Best. And so he became this upstart Quaker who was peddling demon rum, and he got kicked out of the Quaker organization for that. But in any case, so the second stage of his career came at the age of 54 when he retired from his merchandising business and became a full-time executive at B&O Railroad Company, which was America's first common carrier railroad. And he was the largest individual stockholder in the company. So that's where he really made all of his money.
The B&O, the Baltimore and the Ohio, that railroad used to run through my small hometown a long time ago.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Doesn't exist anymore, does it? Is it merged into some other railroad?
It does not. It is part of the Jesse system.
I see.
which is headquartered in Jacksonville, Florida.
Interesting that Johns Hopkins should make the majority of his wealth through the demon rum. That parallels, doesn't it, to Joseph Kennedy, the patriarch of the Kennedy family. Didn't he make most of his money from liquor, too, I think?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And Johns Hopkins felt that he was divinely anointed to make money. And so he said that he hated anything that did not produce money. He was a very philanthropic man, but at the same time, he did that anonymously. So when he unveiled his will in 1873, he made the bequest to the university and the hospital. Now the hospital was the focal point of his attention, because at the age of 34, he himself had contracted cholera. There was a cholera epidemic in Baltimore. He contracted cholera. He survived, but that gave him an interest in hospital activities. And when he joined the B&O Railroad as an executive, he also joined two hospital boards. And so he did not have any medical education, and his formal education was kind of sparse, but he was interested in bringing curative opportunities, particularly to segments of the population that did not have them. So his will concerning the hospital decreed that the hospital treat indigent patients regardless of color, gender, or age. And those were very progressive ideas at his time.
Listeners, did you know much about Johns Hopkins, the man? I don't think so. In addition to weaving together a biography of this man, one of America's richest men, also in your book, Antero, you talk about how the institutions that he founded, that he created, have shaped the racial legacy of Baltimore even to this day, right?
Well, that is true, and I already mentioned the hospital admission policies. When those policies were implemented, Hopkins was the only white hospital in the city of Baltimore that treated blacks. And so it's kind of interesting that in the very beginning, when the will was unveiled, there was a protest movement among white neighbors of Hopkins Hospital, who felt that they did not want another hospital in the neighborhood, and certainly not the hospital that was treating what in those days was called the colored people.
Were there any other ramifications that turned up later with regard to reshaping the city long after his time?
Well, Hopkins' institutions, his legacy, they are involved in various projects that are reshaping Baltimore. And those controversies are very similar to the controversies you are experiencing in Pittsburgh at UPMC, Mercy. Mm-hmm.
A little bit about our guest, listeners. Antero Pietella has spent 35 years in newspaper coverage with, the Baltimore Sun? Is that right, sir?
Yes, sir.
Were you a domestic correspondent, or did you work overseas as well?
Well, I became, when the Baltimore Sun hired me in 1969, I became a foreign correspondent. I was a native and citizen of Finland, reporting on a foreign city that was Baltimore to a foreign audience that were American readers. And so I had always wanted to be a foreign correspondent, so suddenly I became a foreign correspondent in an American city. And then later I became a foreign correspondent for the Sun, first in South Africa and then in Moscow.
Have you written other books, sir, in addition to this one on Johns Hopkins?
My first book was Not in My Neighborhood, How Bigotry Shaped a Great American City, which tracked ethnic rotations in various city neighborhoods and went through all these phenomena that are experienced in many other American cities, redlining, blockbusting, and so on.
Again, listeners, the title of the book is The Ghosts of Johns Hopkins by Antero Pietila, who's been our guest here on It's Your Turn. Thank you, sir. I must say that I'm one of the people who knew about the hospital, but I knew nothing about the man, so it was terrific to talk to you and learn about your book today, sir.
Well, I thank you for your interest.
Sure. So long now. Have a good day.
Okay, thank you.
Nearly 80% of adults in the United States experience neck and back pain at some point in their lives, ranging from mild to traumatic. The specialists at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers diagnose and treat back pain with conservative options and can offer advanced surgical procedures when needed. To learn more, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-877-874-7483. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Welcome back, good friends. It's the Monday edition of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey, and we have three guests who are joining us on the next segment of the program to give us the inside story on a nice holiday concert that's coming up this weekend at Suckup Theater. The Pittsburgh Philharmonic is going to be in town. Larry Stock is the director of the Cultural Center at the college. Larry, good to see you today.
It's always great to be here, Dave.
We're also very pleased to have with us the musical director of the Pittsburgh Philharmonic, and that's Edward Leonard, who joins us by telephone. Maestro, nice to have you with us today as well.
Great to be here again. Thank you.
Sure. And also we have the principal bass player for the Pittsburgh Philharmonic, and that's Naomi Sarche. Naomi, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for the first time here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's get the details, first of all, of the concert. Larry Stock, it's this weekend,
it
right?
It is this Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Suckup Theater, and it's our annual holiday concert, and it's going to be a very festive evening. We've got everything decorated up, and we're going to be serving cookies and punch and Grater's ice cream, thanks to the Pittsburgh Philharmonic, following the concert. So that will be a lot of fun, and Santa may be coming by.
Could be a stop,
so,
huh?
Could be a stop.
Is there a chimney at Suckup Theater? I didn't know that.
We can make one. We have a fireplace, and it's all in your imagination, and he can slide right down and come in there. So,
the concert, yeah. Edward Leonard, is billed as Holiday Pops. So what's on the program? Can you give us a little hint?
We have a huge mix of pieces, some holiday music, some pops that are very familiar, some movie music, some more serious music, and we have Naomi playing a Bottesini elegy for bass. We've been trying to spotlight some players within the orchestra the last few years. It's really a great mix of holiday music for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So there's classical music that has a holiday theme to it, Edward?
Yeah, so everything we're doing is holiday-based, so you'll hear some more contemporary familiar favorites and some older classical music favorites and some stuff that you might want to sing along to, so it'll be a fun evening for sure.
And we want to make sure people know, Larry Stock, this is an evening concert.
Yes, it is, 7:30
p.m. The previous one was an afternoon affair.
Right. We had tried a couple matinees last year, and just the scheduling this year, we were kind of had to do the matinee on an October concert. Mm-hmm. But the next three performances will be on a Saturday evening at 7:30. So.
Well, let's talk for a couple of minutes with the principal bass player with the Pittsburgh Philharmonic. That's Naomi Sarche. First of all, some of our listeners may not be familiar with just what a bass is. Naomi, that's a big instrument, isn't it?
Absolutely. The double bass is the lowest instrument in the string family. It kind of looks like a big cello. Most people have probably seen it featured in jazz bands.
Mm-hmm. When did you start playing the double bass, Naomi, when you were just a kid?
That's correct. I began in September of 2002.
The instrument was probably bigger than you were at that time, I imagine, huh?
That's correct. I was 4'11", trying to play an instrument that was almost twice my size.
But obviously you loved it. My goodness, here you are still playing it years later.
Yes. I started out as a violinist, and we needed volunteers for the program, so I raised my hand and instantly regretted it. I was told to call my parents, and I got an instrument rental card, and I just fell in love with it within 2 weeks, and before I knew it, here we are 16 years later.
Well, there's one thing. If you're playing, you don't have to carry that instrument around, right? The band practice,
oh,
the
I
orchestra
absolutely
practice.
Do.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
You must have a trolley.
I don't. I just kind of strap it over my shoulder and wish and pray that somebody's there to open the door for me. Usually there is.
And when did you join the Pittsburgh Philharmonic, Naomi?
I joined in January of 2017.
Are you from this area originally?
Yes, I bleed black and gold.
Oh, okay. After last night,
our buddy's bleeding.
Literally are bleeding. Yeah, after that crushing loss by the Steelers. So you grew up in this area then? Did you go to high school around here?
That's correct. I am a graduate of Mount Lebanon High School, and I am also a Pittsburgh Youth Symphony alumna as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Edward, it sounds like the Pittsburgh Philharmonic is lucky to have this young lady as their principal bass player, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's really amazing what a great bass player can really, really fill out the section and really help everybody out. And it really serves as a foundation for the string section. So, yeah, it makes a huge, huge difference.
I was telling Larry Stock, and I think Naomi was with us, too, quite just before we went on the air. I saw Peter, Paul, and Mary last night on PBS, one of their pledge breaks, one of their great concerts. I was able to see Peter, Paul, and Mary three or four times live in live concerts, and they always had a bass player in the background, giving them the that low rhythm, and it was kind of, it wasn't really obtrusive, unless you were, you know, in fact, if you watched them on TV, they didn't even know the guy was there.
Right, yeah.
But if you saw them live, he was always there in the background giving that rich sound.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's the piece again, Edward Leonard, that's going to be featured with Naomi this Saturday?
So it's rare to see a bass soloist in the orchestra, and I'm sure Naomi can attest to that, and there are very, very few bass concertos, but there was an Italian composer from around the Romantic period named Battistini, and he wrote a lot of bass music, tons and tons, and it's all very beautiful romantic stuff, and he wrote this 5-minute piece called Elegy, and it's for a bass soloist, Naomi, and a string orchestra to accompany her. So it's one of his top hits, and maybe Naomi can tell us a little bit more about why she likes this piece.
Yes, please do, Naomi. How come you like it so much?
Well, it's, as Eddie kind of touched on, it's not common for double basses to be featured with an orchestra, although it is becoming more common. But the reason why I love this piece so much is because it shows the incredible range of the double bass. It goes from very low notes to notes almost as high as a violin would play. Mm. And many of the melodic lines are even featured off the fingerboard. So it's very challenging technically, but I also love the overall melodic line that it delivers because it just allows the double bass to sing.
Are you familiar with the piece? Have you performed it previously?
I have, yes.
You didn't start out performing this when you were in school, though. I think not, right?
No. Most double bassists learn Jaws first.
Jaws, of course. Naturally. Well, there's that rich sound we were
there
talking
you go,
about.
That low sound, yeah.
From the double bass. Seriously, what was the? Do you remember the first piece that you played, Naomi?
The first solo that I ever performed was The Elephant by Camille Saint-Saëns. I'm sure you're familiar with Carnival of the Animals.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, Saint-Saëns. French composer. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. The Elephant. Wow. Well, that's just terrific. Now, do you, Edward, what happens when you're featuring one of your string players like this? Does Naomi come out front? Does she sit out in front of the orchestra? Or how does that work?
Yeah, so we'll have Naomi standing right by me, typically where you'd have like a violin or a cello soloist, so that we can communicate and that I can accompany her as best I can, and so that she can be seen and heard by everybody. Because, you know, the bass kind of sits off to the side,
mm-hmm.
and is kind of out of the limelight, I guess you could say, but she'll be front and center for our concert on Saturday evening.
Are you the only bass player, Naomi, in the Pittsburgh Philharmonic?
Currently I am, but tonight I will have the principal bassist of the Pittsburgh Civic Orchestra, Rick Lang, assisting me tonight to help me accompany my solo as well.
Okay. Does it take extra rehearsal when you're doing something like this with the rest of the orchestra?
I would say typically, but with this piece, the accompaniment has been absolutely wonderful. Every writ or anything that I want to do, like bending and shaping the piece, they've been really great during rehearsal for that. So, you know, it really only took maybe 10 to 15 minutes to pull it together. It wasn't long at all.
Mm. So that's on the program, along with some other holiday fare. Larry Stock, mm-hmm. I understand that you'll have some other treats in addition to the music.
Well, yes, as always for the holiday concert, we always do kind of a thank you for our patrons and do a cookies and punch reception. And these are good cookies. These are like homemade cookies from this woman that makes the cookies for me. Wonderful person. But anyway, we'll get cookies and punch. And then the Philharmonic has had a really nice deal with Grater's Ice Cream that they bring samples of ice cream. So they're going to be bringing some samples of ice cream. So we'll have cookies, punch, ice cream. And then, of course, as I mentioned, Santa may be making a stop. And then, Ed, is the arts, the market coming back this year? The Christmas market?
I'm not sure. I should check on that and get back to you. Yeah, we have had a Christmas market the last 2 years, so I will check on that and get to you soon.
I was assuming it was because Carolyn Keller, the president of the organization, had been talking to me. And mm-hmm. We were talking about it. So I'm assuming that it is going to be there. But it's still lots of fun, even if they don't happen to come. But the other thing I want to mention is the Toys for Tots drive. If you bring a new toy, mm-hmm. not wrapped, unwrapped, a toy, and bring it to our table, we'll collect it and give you a coupon for a free ticket to an upcoming concert at the Suck Up Theater.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah. You know, bring in some. We collected quite a few toys last year at the theater for the holiday concert. So, and then we turn those over to the Philharmonic, and they are the ones that are the point people for the toy drive. So we help support the Pittsburgh Philharmonic's toy drive with this.
Edward Leonard, one of our guests, joining us by telephone, the musical director of the Pittsburgh Philharmonic. And Edward, you'll be leaving. This is your last concert with the Philharmonic, correct?
This is my last concert. I've been lucky to have been there for about 8 seasons, and I was one of their substitute conductors before that. So it's been a really, really great time, great run, but things just change and life paths change. So I'll be leaving after this concert, but they have two outstanding finalists that will be joining in the spring, Dan and Scott. They're both wonderful musicians, and I'm eager to see who they choose, but those will be the two finalists conducting in the spring at Butler and our other concerts.
And what about your future plans? Are they solidified yet or no?
Well, I actually founded an orchestra, a chamber orchestra. There aren't any chamber orchestras in Pittsburgh, but I founded one a few years ago with my wife, and it's started to develop and grow enough that I'm going to be dedicating a lot more time to that. That's kind of where my career path has taken me.
And what's a chamber orchestra? It's much smaller, right? Just a few individuals?
Right. So, yeah, a chamber orchestra is the size in between maybe a chamber music group, maybe 3 or 4 people, and an orchestra, a symphonic orchestra, which is anywhere from 80 to 120 people. So we have between 16 and 30 people playing. So it's an in-between ensemble.
Mm-hmm. When I hear chamber orchestra, I tend to think of, you know, performances in a drawing room somewhere.
That's where it
originated.
That's where it started. You know, that was, you know, back in the day. You know,
it's probably where the name comes from,
yeah,
I suppose.
In the chamber, yeah. Chamber orchestra.
Yeah. So is that principally strings in the group that you founded, Edward?
Yeah, it's mostly strings, depending on what we are performing, some woodwinds and brass. It's called the Chamber Orchestra of Pittsburgh. We focus a lot on music that was written for that size of a group, maybe Haydn and Mozart, because this was typically the kind of ensemble they would be writing for. And we've commissioned some new music, and we've done some music that is hardly played just because of the awkward size of the orchestra. So there's a huge amount of repertoire that we're kind of delving into, and it's been really fascinating stuff.
The Pittsburgh Philharmonic is coming to Butler this Saturday for an evening concert, Holiday Pops concert. What sort of musicians make up the Pittsburgh Philharmonic, Edward Leonard? Where do these talented people come from?
They come from all walks of life. It's a largely volunteer orchestra. We have everything from accountants to lawyers to doctors to pretty much everything, software engineers, and some professional musicians too, and some people that are looking to get a little experience before they go farther into their musical education. So it's a group of real music lovers that are doing it for the sheer enjoyment of it, and they put on four concerts a year and a summer series as well, and it's just delightful to work with them. Having worked with both professional and amateurs, volunteers like the Pittsburgh Phil, it's strikingly different how both approach it. A professional is much more cut to the chase, I want to go home. And the volunteer, that they're really there and they're investing their own time. So it's a real different experience, a much more maybe enjoyable, but much more of a camaraderie kind of experience, I think.
What about you, Naomi Sarche? Do you fall into that volunteer category as the double bass player?
Absolutely. I really enjoy playing with this group. They were very welcoming since I joined, and Eddie has been very supportive of my musical growth and technical facility as a bass player, but the overall community and camaraderie feel that Eddie was talking about, for sure, I think is what helps us play so well.
What are some of your favorite pieces to play, Naomi, other than the Bottesini? I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. The Bottesini piece that you're going to be performing this Saturday night. Do you have any other favorite pieces?
Yes, Scheherazade by Rimsky-Korsakov.
One of my favorites, too. I've worn out my copy of that, I think.
And, of course, you know, César Franck's Symphony in D Minor. That's another one of my favorites.
Can you play by yourself, or must you have other instruments with you?
I typically play by myself in this group, but I think that's also really helped me grow and develop as a leader and a principal player, being part of that foundation of the orchestra. But as I mentioned, this coming weekend, I will have a guest principal bassist with me, so that will be a nice change.
Do you have a favorite composer of all time?
Brahms.
Well, I can't go wrong with that, I don't think.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Is the double bass, that's an incredibly expensive instrument, is it not, Naomi?
Yes. An inexpensive bass that most students start out on can be anywhere from $900 to $1,700. But the instrument that I will be playing this coming weekend is valued at about $12,000. That's correct.
Wow, that's right. You wouldn't want to drop that when you were traveling around. I suppose there are special cases for, you know, airline travel and that sort of thing for these instruments.
Yes, they do have like 80-pound travel flight cases that are used. You would have loved to see me wheeling one of those around Washington, D.C. That was a good time.
You'd have a hard time keeping up with the piccolo player, that's for sure.
For sure.
Well, that's wonderful. Will you be staying on, Naomi, with the Pittsburgh Philharmonic for the immediate future?
I'm considering it only because I'm currently applying to graduate schools for double bass performance and Master of Music. So I have auditions coming up in January, so I might not be as readily available in the Pittsburgh area as I travel. But, of course, I'll fill in as needed, for sure.
Enlighten me a little bit more about your instrument, the double bass. It's a non-fretted string instrument, am I correct on that?
That's correct.
So that means you must have a very good ear for music because there's really no guidelines, right, as to your fingering other than your ear.
That's correct. Most beginning string players, we use tapes. And as you learn to put your fingers in the correct places, the tapes fall off. And typically by then it's expected that you will have the ear to listen and adjust accordingly.
I admire any talented musician, but to play a stringed instrument, especially when it doesn't have frets on it like a guitar, that just seems to Take a really special talent for me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, gosh, thanks for being with us. I'm going to talk about some of the other upcoming stuff at the Suck Up Theater Performing Arts thing. But we really, and Edward Leonard, for goodness sakes, nice to talk to you for the last time. It's been good to chat with you on a few occasions over the years.
Oh, yeah. It's been great being on your show. Thank you so much.
Sure. And nice to meet you, Naomi. Thanks for being with us here today.
Thank you for having me as well.
All right. So long now.
See you on Saturday.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Tickets available for these two concerts? This concert. These two people are going to be at this concert.
Yes. Tickets are still available. We have lots of good seats left. The tickets, you could call our box office at 724-284-8505 or go online at bc3.edu/suckup-theater. And there will be tickets available at the door. But I want to ask just anyone who has called into our box office line and has not gotten a return phone call, please be patient. We are not Time Life magazine. We do not have operators standing by. There's Mike Beck and myself. That we run the theater, pretty much the two of us. And we are the only ones really that answer the phone, with the exception of a wonderful volunteer I have who checks the messages remotely. But Shirley has been out of commission, but she's back on the job now. So she will be back. She had to be out of the loop for a while, but she's back working and checking the messages. So be patient. We will get back to each and every one of you. But you must leave a message for us to do that with your phone number that we can reach you back, because we cannot be there to answer the phone 24 hours a day. And even during our normal box office hours, our 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., I don't remember the last time I've been able to spend that many hours at my desk at the theater. There's so many things that take our time away from our phones and our desks that we cannot sit there to answer the phone all the time. So I wish we had a better deal for that, but anybody wants to volunteer, come on and come talk to me and we'll get you lined up.
But if you leave a message, you'll get back.
We will get back to you. So please do leave the message. And tickets are available. We do have the $15 tickets. Senior citizen, 65 and up, $13. Student tickets are $10. And that's any area students. So this is a great concert to bring young people because we have Santa coming, I think, I hope. And it's just some good holiday music that you'll be able to hear, familiar more so than some of the others.
Pittsburgh Philharmonic this coming Saturday evening, the Holiday Pops concert at Suck Up. And it's 7:30 concert time, you said?
7:30, yes.
We need to check midday lottery numbers, I believe, correct? We do? So we'll take a quick break for those, and then we'll be back. I want to talk with Larry Stock about some of the other upcoming events as we approach, gosh, the halfway point of the school year.
Yeah.
That's hard to believe.
Who
isn't
knew?
It?
Yeah.
I'll tell you about some of the other stuff that's coming up in the Performing Arts Series at Suck Up Theater right after these words. We'll be right back.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 0505. Pick 3, 443, 443. The pick 4, 0810. The pick 5, 97948. Wild ball for each of those is 8. The treasure hunt, 1, 14, 15, 20, and 22. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $25,000.
With winter weather just around the corner, contact a qualified service technician to ensure that your propane system is operating safely. Make sure that everyone in your family knows what propane smells like and what to do in the event of a gas leak, including knowing where the gas supply valve is and when and how to safely close it. Call us today to learn more.
Brought to you by the Pennsylvania Propane Gas Association and your local propane service providers.
Curious about the world around you? From politics and gardening to unlocking the secrets of longevity, experience Mind Matters, a free series created especially for baby boomers and beyond. Mind Matters is a series for older adults to watch, learn about new things, and then engage with their peers. Contact your local senior center for more information. To locate your nearest center, visit aging.pa.gov. Again, that's aging.pa.gov.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back. Wanted to talk about some of the other upcoming events as we near the midway point of the season, the Performing Arts series at Suckup Theater on the BC3 campus. Well, first of all, we were just talking about the Pittsburgh Philharmonic. Even after the Holiday Pops concert this Saturday, there'll be two more concerts.
There's two more programs for them, one in March and one in May, March 9th and May 11th. And both of those are fun because one is the new, Young Artist Concerto Competition winner that they will have featured. And the other is the Young Composer Contest winner. So that's in that order. So there's New Horizons and then First Listen. They'll be playing some new music and some interesting things. The description I had in the brochure was a little vague because they were going to work with these guest conductors to decide who was going to be the full-time conductor. Mm-hmm. And they hadn't chosen all the repertoire yet when I printed the brochure in August. So that's why we're a little vague on the descriptions for those. But I think it's bound to be good. I mean, everything they perform for us is great. I mean, they have just gotten so good over the years. And
having the young performers is one thing, but young composers, that's totally different. That's a real special talent there.
Yes, we've had some wonderful, wonderful things that they've brought to us. Mm-hmm. So that's been great. It's having those two concerts. For my performing arts series, I have two really good programs coming up. First one, Sunday, February 24th at 2 p.m., the Fitzgeralds. They are a fiddling step dancing group from Canada. They're a family. They're siblings, brothers and two sisters and a brother, and a good friend of them that's there. There's like basically four of them that perform.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw them showcase at the MAPAM conference in Lancaster. They are wonderful. They are absolutely wonderful, energetic. I was exhausted watching them perform for 10 minutes. They're going to be here for like a two-hour program.
Well, if you watch step dancing, you can get kind of exhausted.
Yeah, this is a totally different thing from what you might have known from like river dance or something like that. It's Canadian step dancing. It's a different type. And it's delightful. It's so much fun to watch. And they're so talented. I mean, between the group, they've got step dancing champions, national step dancing champions, national fiddling champions. I mean, these people are amazing musicians and performers. So that's going to be a great show. I've said if you like the Tamburitzins when they've been here, and they'll be coming back in 2020, I'm bringing them back to the Suck Up. But if you like them, you'll love this kind of thing because they're just so energetic and good.
You've also got Beatlemania Magic.
Oh, Beatlemania Magic coming back on March 23rd. If you've not seen this before, you need to. If you are a fan of the Beatles, you will love this because you can close your eyes and you swear you're watching the Beatles or listening to the Beatles. I have such a large time with this one because I get to mix the sound for it and I get to label my console John Paul George Ringo. And it's like I feel like I'm mixing for them. But it's just a delight because, you know, I know every lyric to every song and every guitar lick. And
That's pretty fabulous.
But they're very, very good. And the other two things I have coming up are three things in my local artist series. I have a gentleman coming in February 3rd, Matt Texter. He's from the Erie area and very talented singer-songwriter. And he's open for Marty Stewart and a couple other open and regional acts that have come through the area up through Erie. And he's going to be coming. Hope he doesn't get snowed in that weekend because they get a lot of snow up there at Erie. But he'll be coming Sunday, February 3rd at 2 p.m. And then I have coming back, and this is a change I need to – this is a good time to talk about this – the Tornado Big Band, they're coming back this year, but they have changed their date. They had a conflict. So instead of the 31st of March, they're going to perform on the 24th. It's the Sunday previous at 2 p.m. So my brochures and all my advertising says the 31st of March, but it's actually the 24th of March. And I'm going to be sending out press information and doing some advertising to let people know that that has changed at 2 p.m. And then our last show is at Bay. The last local artist series is Sunday, May 5th with, Vince Tavolario and friends. And if anybody has ever eaten at Attili's restaurant, probably got to know Vince Tavolario.
He's the guy.
And when the South restaurant, when the original main restaurant was still open, he had the lounge there, and he used to perform there.
And every weekend.
Oh, yeah. And then he would perform at the Suck Up Theater for their summer concert series and outside for the summer concert series for many years. And Vince is a great guy, very talented musician. Had a music degree from the Conservatory of Music in Cincinnati. And a lot of people don't even realize that, how talented a musician this man is. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's great, and everybody loves it. And then, you know, if you remember singing Hey Mama at the summer concert series, he's probably going to pull that out of the... pull that. And New York, of course, are his signatures. He always does that one.